afternoon. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour, Culture and Current Events Hour, Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. The transition begins even now with Trump meeting with Obama at the White House, getting all the top secret briefings, all of the things that have happened there. We'll look at a little bit of how this is unfolding according to a couple of news sources, NPR and the New York Times, I think is what I've found so far. Lots of stuff out there, of course, on this transition time. And another interesting story that apparently we didn't know during the campaign, but Donald Trump, with a seemingly open mind to the LGBT movement, which I don't necessarily think has been a hallmark of the GOP. As I said in my Facebook post, I think we're probably going to start seeing a lot more underreported or never reported information on Donald Trump as we move toward his presidency. And then some ballot initiatives that seem to go directly against Catholic social justice teaching that were victors on Election Day as well. We'll talk about all of that and more this afternoon. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back in a moment.
If you enjoy listening to the Leo Brown Almost Hour, consider becoming a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
You're listening to a Breadbox Media podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We are back at Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture and Current Events, our Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Well, it looks like the transition has begun when we're now in a very rapid transition over the course of the next several weeks into the inauguration in January and the new president taking his seat in the White House, President Donald Trump. And I think it's interesting as you look at certainly the meeting that resulted, which is part of the transition between the president, the sitting president, and the president-elect. And what Trump has said, according to a couple of news sources, is that he thinks the president is a very fine man and he's willing to consider him for counsel, which, generally speaking, this is the type of transitions we see. We know that there's something about the experience of 8 years in the White House that, regardless of politics, just that experience alone is something that will be beneficial to the incoming president. And certainly it would be a horrible disservice if a president elect decided, well, forget about what that guy has to offer. I'm not going to consult at all. I'm not going to worry about that, which I think it would be easy to assume that this is what a Trump presidency may look like. You know, I think we saw some character revealed a number of times. I've questioned that character from a Catholic perspective. I've asked, is this the guy that we really want representing us? And then I have to ask, what have we really seen? What have we really seen? I've said before, I'm not a liberal pundit. I'm not going to say everything that President-elect Trump does is wrong. I'm just not going to do that. I generally am a center-right voter. I'm an independent because of what I believe as a Catholic. Is unfortunately there's far too much outside of either platform to embrace a partisan position completely. I can't do that. I'm beyond that in my faith. But at the same time, I was not a basher of the Obama administration. I questioned a couple of the policies. I had serious issues with the HHS mandate and what it meant for Catholic organizations. I've been outspokenly critical about that. But I don't make it my business to criticize any administration or a sitting president. I may ask questions, as any commentator needs to. We need to examine any issue as it arises and begin to ask intelligent questions that hopefully gets us all thinking. But the one thing I will not do, nor have I ever done, is take a wholesale approach against an administration as if I've got a problem with it. I was outspoken on Trump a number of times through this election, as I was with Clinton, to the point that I again said, regardless of the outcome, my candidate is very unlikely, even though there was a statistical chance he didn't win a state, didn't block 270 from anyone. That did not happen. And this is where we are with what we have. So I intend to make the most of this and move forward. And as I've said in Facebook posts, God bless the USA, and let's all pray for resolve to many of the challenges that we face, because we do know this. We do know that there is the racial challenge is not the only challenge. Yeah, it's a problem. The injustices that are there for certain communities is undoubtedly a problem. But I tell you what, I read through the first 100 days of the Trump administration pledge. And one thing that I value is he's talking about investing in infrastructure, especially water problems. We know that Flint, Michigan is just one of many cities that have horribly outdated water systems that are causing problems for the community, undoubtedly. That's just one of the problems that he's pledged to take care of. How much of these first 100-day pledges he's actually going to be able to get to, I don't know. But that's one that I'm like, well, I'm happy to see that. Happy to see that. He's talking about a hiring freeze on government employees that would then phase down the federal government. Who's done that? I think there's value to that. I think you got to look at some of these things. I even said early on when he first released his tax plan, I said, I'm going to applaud what I can applaud in this. Now, I'm not crazy about mass deportations or banning Muslims in the country or all of these things that look xenophobic and perhaps racist, whatever. But I'm going to give credit where credit is due. I'm going to give credit to the fact that he's saying, and literally, God bless him, if this happens, it'll be miraculous, but he's talking about imposing term limits on congressional members. Career politician is a problem. We know that this system's broken because of that, because there are those who become millionaires in Congress. How does that happen? Then he says a 5-year moratorium on any congressional member leaving Congress after their term limit would be enacted before they could become a lobbyist, which we know that's another problem. So there's some interesting things that you see in this policy that at least makes you go, well, those are moving things in the right direction. And I know that there are those who have they're still in this funk. They're like, this is not real. This did not happen. And as I've said, I'm watching, as I have, both sides of this, because even though I did at one time subscribe to the platform of the GOP, I've always had a more independent mindset. But I do know that 8 years ago, there was stunned disappointment when Obama entered his first term. And there was so much fear, so much anxiety, especially from the right-leaning individuals that it was as if the world had ended. I mentioned this on Facebook post earlier. At least one individual I know entered a depression. I mean a depression. And I hope that she's out of it now. Because that's the effect that politics can have. That's the problem I have. Right? I think if all of us took a little bit more of a distance approach, yeah, get involved, vote, do all of the things you need to do come election time. But my goodness, if you're so emotionally attached to this that you're going to find yourself, I may keep seeing these posts and I'm like, come on, I understand. Your person didn't win. I get that. But let's not be so emotionally attached that we can't see the good even in that with which we disagree. I have filtered through the Obama administration for 8 years and said, I can applaud this. I support this. I see what this president was trying to do here. This makes sense. And I think you know that I've been fair. I've always tried to do that. I've asked the questions that needed to be asked. Again, the Obamacare, the HHS mandate, even the purchase mandate I questioned. And I've even been critical of Justice Roberts' majority decision when it came to identifying this penalty as a tax and therefore making it constitutional. I will ask the questions that need to be asked when they need to be asked, but to simply assume that everything is all bad now, it's done, it's over, I don't think any of us need to do that. We need to ask the questions when they need to be asked. We need to see where this is going. I want to believe that this is a new era of Trump, right? We're seeing something different. I don't know. He's our president now. I have to put my hope somewhere. Yes, I've questioned his integrity. I've questioned his authenticity. As I've said, I've read his books. I don't believe that he always says or presents the most truthful scenario, whatever it may be. That's a concern. But he's our president now, and we could spend the next 4 years in a depression, or we could say, you know what, we're going to watch this administration, we're going to see what comes along, we'll challenge those things that need to be challenged appropriately, and if we need to make changes, if we need to enact changes, we'll do that. But in the meantime, I do think it might be time to look at what I call the third way in politics, because this us against them, I don't know that that's going to get anything done. We'll see if there's bipartisan support in this administration. Time will tell. Back with more in just a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
You're listening to a Breadbox Media podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
We are back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events Hour, Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. A lot of talk about this situation with Father Frank Bobone. I had mentioned this, I guess, yesterday or day before, not sure when. And now it looks like the Diocese of Amarillo has come out with a statement of continued investigation, but definitely a statement concern over this episode and certainly denouncing this episode. And now we'll see where this leads. But the episode being, of course, Father Frank Bobone presenting an aborted fetus baby, if you want to use that language. I'm happy to use it if you're offended by saying fetus. But this is an aborted child, a human being, let's put it that way. I would prefer that. I would say a human being with equal human dignity, not only mistreating the altar, but mistreating the human person in this display. I was concerned. It appears the diocese is concerned. And now Crux Now coming out with this story that I posted over on my Facebook page, that basically the old guard needs to change when it comes to the pro-life movement. Elizabeth Hansen writing, freelance writer, graduate of Franciscan University Steubenville. And I think that her experience is very similar to mine in the sense that there has now, especially now, and I think this is the episode. And I've been criticized for criticizing this because as if my concern is that this was a political stunt. I don't care about political stunts, quite frankly. Do all the political stunts you want. That doesn't bother me at all. Support your person. Do what you need to do. I don't care. I don't care if it's from the pulpit. I don't care where it's coming from, quite frankly. But don't, in your attempt to make a statement about human dignity, degrade human dignity in the process. That's not how we get things done. It's not how this works. And as I've said time and time again, if we had a movement that's not just focused on the one issue, which is foundational, undoubtedly, but all of the dignity issues combined, now we're talking. We got something that I think many could embrace, because within this movement, they're going to find their voice. They're going to find their human voice that says, this is what we believe. So this is what I propose. And I know it's not politically expedient. I understand that. But if we had a movement that said we can embrace a Black Lives Matter movement because of the dignity that is of concern within this focus, while at the same time understanding that we are here to protect the unborn, within that same movement, my goodness, right? If we can stand arm in arm on those issues, because they all are about human dignity. If we can have a movement that says we need a path forward to citizenship, especially for those illegal immigrants who have spent their entire lives here, who may have come over as children of illegals and never have gained citizenship, but they basically have been educated right alongside quote-unquote American children this entire time, and they are Americans for all intents and purposes. They've been here for 15 years. We need a path forward to citizenship for these individuals, not a mass deportation. We're going to lock arms with this organization, with this movement, and we're going to say we also need to protect the unborn. If we had a movement that said we need to find ways for true, affordable health care and opportunities for education when it comes to young mothers in crisis situations who feel like they can't do this, and we work to find solutions for those situations so mothers don't have to make the choice that they think they have to make in order to move their lives forward, even those mothers who have been abandoned by the birth father of their unborn child, and we work arm in arm with those organizations as effectively as we possibly can and say we need to protect the unborn. Now we have some legs to stand on. And we can do this because these are all human dignity issues. They're all under the same umbrella. We don't have to venture outside of that umbrella. We don't have to look into some vastly wide plane of concerns and say, okay, we need to find a movement that encompasses all of this. No, we need to just look at one thing, and one thing only, and that is human dignity. How does this affect the dignity of individuals? And then when we begin to work on these issues and we bring all of them truly under this umbrella to the point that we're not seen as some sort of political pawn. This is not seen as some sort of wrangling to try to get a candidate elected, but it's seen as a sincere desire to protect the dignity of each and every individual, regardless of whether they're born or unborn, whether they're black, white, Republican, Democrat, single, married, whatever. There's no distinction other than, can we stack this up against what we understand as Catholics as being the absolute paramount concern of human dignity, and does it fit? Preeminence, we've talked about this. What does preeminence look like? It says it's first. Now, first does not mean only. First might mean we have an importance that says, yes, without this, nothing can take place. Without the right to life, we have no other dignity. Yes, you could say that. Absolutely. But that doesn't mean we degrade or negate or disregard the dignity issues because, well, we're focused on this part. This is it right here. This is all it is to us. And because we're focused here, who cares about the other stuff? Using the excuse of, well, without this, you got nothing. It's easy to say. And it's easy to get to the point that we have such tunnel vision that we've forgotten even why. And that's the question. Yeah, I get a lot of questions, even criticism about, Leo, why do you keep talking about this stuff? Why are you so against Donald Trump? And I even said, it's not that I'm against Donald Trump. What I'm against is politicizing an issue that can't be politicized. That's what I have a concern about. Because the human dignity spectrum is beyond, again, it's why I'm an independent. The Catholic ethos is beyond a party platform. If 25% of this country, which apparently identifies as Catholic, took that mantle seriously, we would have to have a third way. We would have to have a new political platform. And I'm not saying it is or isn't the American Solidarity Party, which I know those guys try to come out with a Catholic way of seeing things. I'm not sure what it is. I think that there are other independents. I think there are other Christians. I don't think it needs to be necessarily presented from a Catholic standpoint. I think it needs to be presented from a human dignity standpoint and say, this is why we believe what we believe. Because it's about people. It's about people being treated fairly. It's about people being treated with true dignity that says, you're as important as this person is important, as is this person is important, and this person. We draw no distinctions. We don't say that we're focused only on innocent life. I know that's a popular idiom. Well, innocent life, this is what we're talking about. With the assumption that we are the arbiter, that we can come in and say, well, you're obviously not innocent. We've judged that. There have been individuals who have been convicted of crimes and exonerated. There have been death row inmates who have gone to their death as innocent human beings. We've only assumed their guilt. So if we were to put this package together, it's first off not going to fit into a political mindset, so that's a challenge to begin with. But if we began to partner with this understanding across all of these aisles to say we have one litmus test here, is it human dignity oriented? Does it afford dignity for the individuals who are involved? Then you know what? We're going to support it. It's going to be a part of what we do. Now I think we're on to a movement that could really begin to make change, make strides, and connect some unconnected in a big, big way. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
If you enjoy listening to the Leo Brown Almost Hour, consider becoming a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
You're listening to a Breadbox Media podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back in Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Posted a post about investigations into Muslim girls being attacked since the election, and whether it's related, whether it's hate, what it is. I know we have challenges, undoubtedly. We were talking about this a moment ago. Then a friend of mine posted a video of a white guy apparently being attacked by black guys because of his Trump support. If any of this is true, and as a friend of mine commented, hoping that the Muslim thing is just internet sludge, as he calls it. I hope it's all internet sludge, but if it's not, if it isn't, and this is true, any of this is uncalled for, and we have to be champions of human dignity. It's back to what I was saying a moment ago. If we embrace our Catholic ethos in its totality, we must be champions of human dignity, regardless. So we denounce all of this. Speaking of champions of human dignity, it was widely unreported and apparently obviously true that Donald Trump held an LGBT flag with the inscription LGBT for Trump, I think is what it was, if I'm not mistaken, and pledged support to the LGBT community to say, I am your champion as well. Not something we heard a whole lot about, but if this is true, I think that we have to applaud this, because this is what we understand as Catholics, that we don't say gay people are bad, right? It's not what we stand for. We don't say that there's a deficiency or something that is inherently wrong with an individual who happens to have same-sex attraction. We don't say that. What we say is homosexual acts are disordered, which I know that sounds like, oh, there's something wrong with me. Is that what you're saying? No. Listen, please understand why we say what we say. And really, I wish that in the catechism there was, and there may be a footnote, and I'm not familiar with it. If there is, forgive me for not knowing this, and I should investigate more. But if it was parenthetical to say, we believe homosexual acts to be disordered as we do the disordered, in the same degree of disordering as we see premarital sex, extramarital sex, masturbation, all of these other areas that contraception, I need to add in there. I knew I was forgetting one, where this is a disordering as well. This is a disordering and intrinsic evil. What makes it intrinsic is the very nature. The evil comes from the lack of God being in this equation, coming from the act itself, not extrinsic, but intrinsic, not an external influence, but an internal, because the act is taking place without regard for the gift of sexuality that is reserved exclusively for the sacramental bond of marriage between a man and a woman open to life. That's what we believe as Catholics. Now, that sounds prohibitive, or it sounds limited, or perhaps archaic. But this is what we understand. This is why we have in our luminous mysteries of the rosary that we pray on Thursdays, if you pray a rosary, the wedding feast at Cana. This is, there's something about this feast of matrimony, which is echoed in the epistle to the Ephesians. This is a sacredness in this union because of the sacramentality of this union that models and reveals something about the nature of God. We can look to marriage, we can look to the fruitfulness of marriage, we can look to the unity of marriage, and see that when it's done well, within the sacramentality that it can be, God is revealed. And that doesn't just have to be a family with 6 or 9 kids. Can be. It can be the childless couple that for whatever reason struggles with infertility. It can be the family with adopted children. It could be the family that was open to life, as open as anyone could possibly be, that only have one child or two. I've seen that. So it's not our place to judge which one of these equations looks more like the kingdom of God, right? As they appear to be building the kingdom through their family size. It's a horrible injustice. And a bizarre sort of, not that I wanted to get into this in this discussion, but there's a bizarre sort of judgment at play at times that I've discovered, certainly from those who, oh, you 2 kids? Oh, okay. I've experienced that before, as strange as that may sound, that there's almost you're a good Catholic family. Okay, 2 kids? Oh, hmm. Yes, and our children were adopted through Catholic Charities. Oh, and then suddenly the tone changes. So I know it sounds crazy, but there's been that kind of, I've had those conversations. It's probably my perception that I seemed to feel like I was being judged, perceived a judgment that may not have been there. I get that. But nonetheless, I have had that experience, be it real or not. But in all of this, back to where I was beginning this conversation, whatever's happening, I don't care if it's some sort of apparent hate because of where someone stands politically or where they happen to be religiously or what they happen to represent, this is wrong. This is wrong. These are dignity issues. Even sexual orientation, which we may not agree with, we have to respect the dignity of these individuals and realize that we're all called to something greater. Every one of us is called to something greater. I don't care if you're seemingly doing everything right. You know what? You're still called to something greater. Because we're all called to be imitators of Christ, right? We're all called to cooperate with the grace that is afforded to us through the giftedness that we have, and somehow in that equation do something greater, something bigger, something better. We are never to be complacent as followers of Christ. We're never to be complacent with what we have, to say, this is just good enough, God. I did my thing. I went to Mass on Sunday. or today or whatever. Yeah. I did my holy hour this week. I did my service at the soup kitchen. I gave my tithe. Whatever. I mean, we can easily say, I've checked that off. I'm good. But until we're really searching, until we're really digging, and we're saying, you know what? What's next, God? What do you want? Where do you want me to go? I'm walking by faith here. I know I've got a vision. I pray that it's yours. But help me walk through this. I've mentioned this on Facebook. I haven't talked a lot about it on the show. But yeah, I stepped into a fast on All Saints Day last week. Now in week two, writing this through the Christmas feast, and it's a time of change for me already. It's a time of experience in a way that I didn't imagine. It's a way that I am beginning to see perhaps, I don't know, perhaps something that this organization of Breadbox Media is called to, this opportunity for us to be instrumental and something that I know that God is up to. I don't really know the dynamics of this yet, but I know this: I'm not willing to be complacent. I'm not willing to be satisfied and simply say, okay, that's good enough. I know there's always more. I know there's a deeper, I can get more deeply into the heart of Christ. I know that. I know I'm not there. I know I can enter into a time of nurturing in that heart. I know that as a result of that, I can be more effective as a Christ follower, as a Christ imitator. I can do things because I can do things because I am given the opportunity through the grace of God, and always do more. That's where we need to be. That is using our dignity, and ideally that's impacting the dignity of others. So hope all of that makes sense. God bless you. Thank you for listening. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour.
If you enjoy listening to the Leo Brown Almost Hour, consider becoming a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you. Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.